sometimes we see the presence of Jesus in hindsight better than we do when he's right there beside us. You get older and you learn to discern it, and it's different. But back then, but when my dad walked out of my life, Jesus became visible in my life at the same time.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show. On behalf of Discipleless City, I'm Todd Carlton, and this is the Toddcast. Friends, for more information and what you can learn about Discipleless City, check out our website at discipleesscity.ca. We have a video series there that will help you equip Christians to share the gospel and essentially become disciple-making disciples. Thanks for listening to the show and watching on YouTube. Please like and subscribe. Hit that notification bell so you can find out when all the latest episodes are coming on. And we would love to hear from you. You could send us an email at information@discipleesscity.ca. We'd love to hear what you think about the show. And don't forget to check out our website, thetoddcast.ca. Friends, of course, we're all over socials too. We are on Facebook and Instagram. And I'd like to invite you into getting something positive in your life with the United Hive app. This is an app that you can download and share testimonies of encounters that you have with other people, salvations, baptisms, all that great stuff. Something positive to start your day. It's all over the App Store. Check out the United Hive app. Well, friends, my guest today is the president and CEO of Prison Fellowship Canada. She's been involved in leadership with this organization since 2009, with over 16 years of volunteer experience in Federal and Provincial Corrections Canada. And her organization is currently helping people in over 150 prisons. Please welcome Stacey Palmer.
Here, Todd.
Hey, how are you?
Great.
Oh, I was a little slow on the button there. You wouldn't notice it on your end, but I was a little slow clicking you off there.
Oh, there you go. I'm doing great. Yeah, doing great. How about you?
I'm great. Thanks. Welcome to the show. Thanks for taking some time to chat with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, quite an extensive time of volunteering with 16 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's really great.
Never intended to fought it all the way. And but once, right from day one, just loved it. And I have to say, I love it as much today. I'm going when I'm done here. That's where I'm going. I'm off to prison.
Awesome. And not many people say that with a smile on their face, that line.
That's for sure.
Well, Stacey, would just really obviously love to hear about your ministry and what it's all about and what you're doing in there and helping people and stuff. But as we do on the show, we'd just really love to start with you, with Stacey. Like, who are you? So, Stacey, if you can just give us sort of a description about how you grew up, you know, in faith or whatnot, and leading up to the point where, you know, your faith became your own or Jesus became real to you.
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up in Aylmer, Ontario, just south of London, Ontario, for those of you who don't know, tomato and tobacco country, and lived there for 12 years. I did not grow up in a Christian home. However, I did have a grandma who was a Christian, and I spent a lot of time with my grandma growing up, weekends, summers, that type of thing. I have an older brother who's a couple years older than me. And so she took us to church, but really didn't. My grandma, some of my experience of seeing where Jesus was in my life is hindsight, not that I perceived it or understood it at the time. So my grandma didn't, you know, she sang little Bible songs and told us Bible stories and that kind of thing, but she didn't really push it on us. But that church where she went was actually the first time I ever heard somebody tell me, "I love you," which was a Sunday school teacher. And it was just the coolest feeling as a kid to hear those words. You didn't even know what was going on or why you felt that way, but it was just, you know, just kind of great. But looking back, I can honestly say my grandma, she was the hands and feet of Jesus in my life. Had a bit of a pretty rocky home life and a pretty difficult home life for sure. My parents married as teenagers, so you know that comes with all the things that it comes with. So So that's kind of where the seeds got planted. And even now, or when I had my kids, I'd be in the nursery with my daughter and I'd be singing this song. And it's like, oh gosh, that's a song I learned from grandma. And it's like from 25 years ago. And so there was all these little things in my, Jesus was always there. And there's all these little plantings and seedlings of it. But really, my faith became my own when I was 15. And it was through friends who took me to youth group and took me to church, and I kind of thought it was ridiculous, and I just sneered at the whole thing. And you can't honestly believe this, and that was my approach originally. And but I continued to go with friends, and finally it was actually at KRT, Kennedy Road Tabernacle, one Easter, watching a play, and the Holy Spirit just really spoke to me, and that's when I accepted Jesus. So from there, I was kind of excited about my faith and wanted to know more, read more. And I didn't mention there are a number of divorces in my family, and between my parents. My dad married and divorced three times. My mom married and divorced twice. So the church gave me this sense of, wow, you can have this big family, and I don't have this big family, and I really want a family. And I think that's what really compelled me to the church community, not necessarily to Jesus. There were other things that compelled me to Jesus, but that's what compelled me to the church.
It's funny that you said you thought your thoughts of youth group when your friends brought you there, but yet you went back. And I find it's interesting that a lot of people kind of, I don't want to say blow off youth group, but all youth, and it's just like I don't know, like such a common thing. But there's something so powerful. There's so many powerful stories that actually come out of these youth group gatherings.
Yeah, absolutely, right.
And enough to the fact that your initial thoughts were one way, but yet you kept going back.
Yeah, kept going back. And I think there's something tender about that age, that 15, 16-year old, and maybe goes beyond that too, but that 15, 16-year old, I just hear so many now as an adult, and many, many years later, I just hear so many stories of God's original calling on someone's life being back then.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Stacy, you talked about your parents being separated and remarried and stuff. Did you become close to any of the people that they then remarried and stuff? Like, were relationships built with it? What was that like for you? Like, sort of having those relationships, maybe being attached to some people, and then them getting separated, and then another fracture.
Yeah, what a great question. The man that my mother married, I was not close to, and in fact, I feared him. And that was a really, really difficult relationship, and ended with a lot of trauma in my life, and a lot of trauma in the lives of in our family. My first stepmom that my dad married was only 10 years older than me, and I really liked her, but there was this tension that you couldn't go back home and say that you liked your stepmom, right? So you kind of learn to you really early on learn to read the room and what's okay and what's not okay, and take the temperature of every room and develop kind of this hypervigilance. But my first stepmom, her name was Kathy, and I actually really enjoyed her. And she was very quiet and soft-spoken, and she was by no means a saint or perfect. But I actually really did enjoy her, and I felt really comfortable around her. And we did a lot of fun things together. And when she went through the divorce with my dad, it was just like this switch happened, and all of a sudden, Yeah, it was just completely shut down, and that was difficult, and we never resumed a relationship again. And then the second stepmom, it lasted 10 months. The marriage lasted 10 months, so under a year. So that one was there wasn't any time to really know that individual. So yeah, bringing two separate families together is really hard. It's really complex. It can be done, and it can be done well, but it's also there's a lot of feelings and a lot of dynamics.
What about your dad? How close were you with your dad? And I ask you this because I find that for women, right, if they're not close, if they don't have a really super loving father on earth, it's really hard for them to understand that there's actually a God that loves them to the magnitude that we now know that God loves. So what was your relationship like with your dad?
Yeah, so not a probably one of the most painful parts of my life. So, my dad was well-meaning, good-intentioned. When he grew up, I can be very compassionate looking through my dad's life and why he did some of the things that he did. He's very abusive with himself. He was very abusive with us as kids. And once he married my stepmom, I don't know that the feelings were mutual. I really did enjoy her. I really liked her. I don't know that it was mutual. And there was a point where my dad called me up and said, "I know that you're coming. You're supposed to be coming this weekend, but I've been talking to your stepmom, and we just feel it would be a lot easier if you didn't come anymore." So pretty painful in a kid's life, right? I'm in school. I've moved from this farm country to Mississauga. I'm trying to fit in with these cool chicks in Mississauga, and my clothes are handmade by my mother, and I come from the tobacco fields. And then there's my dad saying, "Yeah, it'd probably be better if you didn't come around." So there were my life was dotted with a lot of long absences of my dad. That happened. I think I was in grade 6 when that happened. Then, when I was in grade 12, he reached out and wanted to reconnect, and we reconnected, and we were connected for a couple of years, and it just went on and off like that, on and off, on and off. And I really struggled the most with it once I had children, because then it was like, how could you do this? Like, how could you do this to a kid? And I just genuinely struggled with that. We lost touch. In fact, he lost touch with both my brother and I. He died in 2017, and he and my brother had been estranged for 17 years, and he and I had been estranged for 15 years.
You and your brother had been
No,
estranged.
not my brother. I'm super close with my brother. My dad and I had been estranged for 15 years when he died. Yeah, and my dad had been estranged from my brother for 17 years at that point. Yeah.
So, not to dive crazy deep into this, but you said your
Yeah.
parents got married as teenagers. So, do you think,
Yeah.
like, because they were just so young and
Oh,
just sort
yeah.
of navigating kids and marriage when you're so young?
Oh, so much pressure. You don't even know who you are, let alone how to raise a family, or how to envision something. And they didn't have a faith, so you're not grounded in that structure of community and connection and good counsel and mentorship. You just don't have that around you. So, yeah.
You,
Tough for both of them.
yeah. You talked about sort of at 15, you
Yeah.
had this encounter, well, that Jesus became real to you. So what did that look like? What was that? What happened at 15 exactly? Could you sort of frame that?
For sure. So here's the interesting thing when I talk about sometimes we see the presence of Jesus in hindsight better than we do when he's right there beside us. You get older and you learn to discern it, and it's different, but back then. But when my dad walked out of my life, Jesus became visible in my life at the same time. And so walking with it was with friends. I was very interested when I go to church, and you'd hear, and where I started was in the Brethren Church, and that has had a history of its own in my life, but I've got to say it's where I developed my love of scripture. And so It's the meaning making. I think it was the meaning making that compelled me. It's not somebody just reading a Bible story, but the application is being drawn, and that just really drew me in. And I think, Todd, what I was looking for was an anchor, and it became an anchor. It wasn't that I knew the person Jesus at that point, but it was the meaning making, and the structure it was giving to my life, and then the community that I was going back to my life. Then, interesting, this is where prison fellowship shows up already at this age as well. So, being 15, I'd just become a Christian. And my high school vice principal was in the lunchroom and, you know, kind of motioned to me with his finger, come on over here. And he said, are you a Christian? And I said, yeah, I just became one. It's like the secret little powwow in the lunchroom. And he said, I've got a really good friend who's got a business really close by, and he's looking for someone to do some reception work after school. Would you be interested? And I said, yeah, I'd be interested. So so it was a real estate
for that.
And he was a Christian. Yeah.
You had to be a Christian.
Well, you know, Christians, like, right, sometimes we want to, there's different reasons you want to, when you have a business or whatever, then you want to make sure that you've got Christians there as well. And everybody's aligned in their thinking and their belief system. So that's how it went. And so I went and had the interview and got the job. And it was a real estate development company in Mississauga. But they were giving free space at the time to a new ministry that was just starting up in Canada, which was Prison Fellowship. So we shared the same common rooms, like the lunchroom, photocopy room, washrooms, that kind of thing. And you know, they were definitely an older crowd, and this little 15-year-old bebops in at the end of school every day for a couple of hours, and I'm here. And one day I came waltzing in, so excited. I've told this story a few times. And guess what, everyone? There's some guy in grade 12 who's going to pay me $50 to write his English essay. And the then head of Prison Fellowship Canada, his name was Ian Stanley. He was the executive director, and he kind of does that same motion that the vice principal did. He says, come on over here. You and I are going to sit down and have a chat, and I'm going to tell you why you're not going to get the $50 and why you're not going to write the essay. And I'm just thinking, $50, I mean, that's got to be the equivalent of $1 million today. And I'm in grade 9. What? How flattering that somebody in grade 12 wants me to write their essay. So so he sat me down, and he became my first spiritual mentor. And from that point, I finished high school on Fridays at noon. And so I would go to this office right after lunch. And Ian sat me down once a week, and we never talked about prison fellowship. But we did talk about my life and my direction and having a vision for my life and what it meant to follow Jesus. And he did that with me for 4 years until wow. I finished up at high school. And I'll just quickly tell you that on the day that I was photographed for the announcement that I was coming into prison fellowship, it was the day that Ian Stanley died.
Oh.
And I never got a chance to tell him I took his chair.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So coming to prison fellowship has been really meaningful, although there was definitely a period of time where I did not want to come, and I did not want to give my life to prison ministry. Yeah.
So he not only discipled you, but was kind of mm-hmm. Like a father figure, essentially, yeah. Right? Because that's the guidance to a teenager and whatnot.
And he was the gentle example of Jesus. Like when you talk about a lot of women who have these difficult relationships with their father, then how do you grasp the concept of father? And I have to say, God has always been incredibly faithful to me. When my parents split, I also moved from London to Mississauga when my when my mom remarried. And that was gutting for me because I lost my grandma. I used to see my grandma. She lived in Elmer, and I saw my grandma every weekend and all the time. Like, she was like a second mother to me. And so then when we left and we moved, everything got taken out from under me. But it didn't. There was a Jewish family that lived next door. And I've always had a Jewish family in my life since then. There's always been a Jewish family that has figured very large in my life. And I used to go on Friday nights and I would babysit for this family. So we would have Shabbat dinner together. And so I learned the whole thing. The fellow that was the father of that house prayed the Aaronic blessing over my head every Friday night at the Shabbat dinner. And then they would go off to synagogue, and I would babysit the kids. But this incredible network of protection has always been around me, and I consider it the presence of Jesus. It just
Amen.
always is.
And you probably didn't realize it at the time, hey?
I didn't. No.
Yeah.
I didn't. So, and I'm still connected, of course, to that family. But there have been that's been an interesting thread. I can't wait to sit down and have a chat with Jesus one day. Tell me about this Jewish thread that always goes through my life
Yeah.
and to this day.
It's so biblical. Like to have that, right? Because it's like as you were saying that and talk about the Shabbat and you know the things that they did, it's like as you're saying that I can see the Bible unfolding, right? For them sort of, you know, teaching you that Old Testament stuff and having your mentor. Your grandma, so moving away and not being with your grandma, was there how much did you get to see her? Did she get to come? Like how much did that change?
No, I would call her. We talked on the phone, but she was older and at that point and had health difficulties and whatnot. When I did go, when I got my driver's license, so I got my driver's license like every other kid when I was able to drive. And once I got my driver's license, I would drive back to her and see her. But there was a period of time where I really didn't see her for a number of years. And we did talk on the phone and we talked on the phone regularly. But it wasn't until I had my driver's license and then I always went back to her.
So how excited was she when you let her know that, you know, at 15, what happened to you at 15? Or did it play out that way or?
Oh, for sure. And I think that's when we started to really have deeper conversations about faith and when she passed away when I was 31, but I have her Bible and there's little different notations she's got in the Bible, like different things she's writing about the Bible itself, but then also different things she's writing about me and conversations we had and it was just I mean we shared that. I consider that my introduction to Jesus was my grandma, both in word and in lived out. She lived out her faith of generosity and joy and goodness and all of that. And she was smart. She was really smart. And so it wasn't all, peppermints and
Peppermints and kumbaya.
There you go.
Should we maybe we should title this episode Peppermints and Kumbaya.
Kumbaya.
Oh, that's funny. So Stacy, so jumping back a little bit to where you said you took over when you got into this prison fellowship ministry, right? When you took over. Well, first of all, tell us what actually that is. And then what it started looking like as you took over. for that.
For sure. So Prison Fellowship is an organization that walks alongside people who are involved in the criminal justice system. So that could be an offender, it can be an ex-offender, it can be their family and children, and it can be victims. And we have programs that are inspired for each of those groups, and the overall vision is that, you know, we understand the word justice biblically. So in my definition of justice is very simple, that God takes what has fallen over and stands it up straight. He recalls it to its original intention. So what is my original intention as a person? Like, what did God design and create me to be as an individual? Justice is achieved when that's achieved. And so when we talk about justice, we're not talking about punishment, and it's kind of become synonymous with punishment. But punishment isn't what God has for us. Discipline, for sure. Discipline is an act of mercy. And I can't tell you the number of offenders who've come to me after years of working with them and said, it wasn't the day I got arrested. It was the day I got rescued. And that's what God does when he interrupts us in our sin. He it's an act of mercy. He stops it, yeah. Even if it's abrupt. So the organization works on that. It works on that paradigm, and then, yeah, we go into I think we're into 154 prisons now, and we do Bible studies, life skill programs, we do victim offender mediation with restorative justice circles with surrogate victims and offenders. We run an angel tree program, which is Christmas and camping for the children of offenders, and we do a bridge care program, which where we walk alongside ex-offenders for up to 4 or 5 years, helping them to reintegrate into community and have a safe faith community to belong to. So those are the things that we do in the organization. And my trip in was a bumpy one. It was a really bumpy one. So I was going along, you know, had a business, a marketing business, been involved with that for a long time. And I really did get to a point where in my faith journey, I'm like, I'm not happy. I'm dissatisfied. I come to church. I'm on all these committees. I do all this work. It's great. I love everybody here. But I'm not happy. And I wonder what it would be like to live my faith outside the four walls. I wonder if it's really real. And it wasn't a period of deconstruction. It was just a period of testing me. It wasn't testing Jesus. It was testing me. And I decided to go back to school. I went back to Tyndale, did my Master's of Divinity there at Tyndale. And shortly before I left, what kept coming to me was prison ministry. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Not a chance. And which is funny when I look back at it now. But believe me, he took me kicking and screaming. So. And then I would take a course and I'd think, wouldn't this be fantastic? Like, what is it? What is a calling? What is a, we hear, oh, I was called. Well, what does that mean? Did the phone ring? No, my phone didn't ring. But I would take a course and then my mind would go to, wouldn't this be great to teach people in prison? And then I'm also trying to doing a double take. Where did I come from? And then I do something else. Now, wouldn't this be great for, can you imagine the vision you could have for this in a prison? Could you imagine what you could do with policy? Can you imagine what you could do with programming in a prison? And it's just like this, what is going on? And so then I went through a period in my life that was really, really difficult. I had my largest client in the business went bankrupt, almost bankrupting me. I went through that. I went through a health scare, which turned out to be fine, but I had a 7-inch growth in my back that had to be removed. My mom and stepdad, who'd been together for 30 years, divorced. I went through a period where There was definitely, it's difficult in a public audience, but in my there was a very bad falling out in my marriage, let's call it that. My daughter, I was called into the school, and there was an issue with my daughter that was going to be a chronic issue. My son was diagnosed with Asperger's. And so there was a whole series of this, and Todd, it all happened in 6 months.
Wow.
And I'm telling you, if you don't have a Jethro in your life, you need a Jethro. You need a butt kicker in your life. And I had a girlfriend who I call my Jethro. And she said to me, "What was the last thing God told you to do that you haven't done? Because your life's a mess." And I said, "Go to prison ministry." And she's like, "I'd get the application done today." So I can laugh at it now, but believe me, I was not laughing then. I mean, everything imploded. My home life, finance, everything, community, everything. And so I did. I applied, and I, through my tears, said to God, "Okay, I'll go do this for 1 year, but I will never be a leader again. I'm going to sit in the corner. I will walk with a group of women or a group of men, whoever you send me to, and I will legitimately and earnestly study the Bible with them for a year. But that's all you're getting." And I still had enough feist in me. And God does what God does, right? So I signed up. Took them a year to actually get the application processed and get me in. And but I went, and I couldn't believe it, Todd. I was there on day one, and I just thought, this is the sweetness of Jesus. I will do this. They will take me out with a toe tag. I will do this for the rest of my life.
Come on.
And I have felt the same way for 16 years. I've never felt any differently. I jump out of bed in the morning to go do this.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And you don't have to ask in a prison who's broken. There's no pretending. There's no yelling and screaming in the car on the way to church and then straightening out your pinafore and looking all pretty and perfect as a family. There's none of that. You're walking into the methadone clinic in the prison, and while people are getting injected, asking if you can hold someone's hand while they go through being high and they under fluorescent lights and observation. My daughter, I remember one time in church, my daughter, the pastor was talking about how you needed to be praying for, let's make a covenant to pray for five people in our life that don't know Jesus. You have, out of the mouth of babes, you have this little girl that gets up and says to me, "Remember, Mom, how you were saying no one has studied the book of Hosea until you've done it in a room full of hookers?" And I've said, so just these things that pass on, and my faith just became so real. And that can sound so edgy, but yeah, like Jesus came for prostitutes and murderers and criminals. And who are we kidding? We have so much darkness in our own hearts. And it just became so real for me.
Yeah. And thank you for sharing all that, because that is very powerful and profound, that there was so much, brokenness and stuff going on in your life, yet your faith still held in. And especially, well, not especially, but I really perked up too when you said that, you were going to church and you were doing all the stuff, but it's just like there need to be
Dry
more.
bones.
Yeah. Need to be
Yeah.
more. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who feel that way and stuff. So,
Yeah.
if you're
Yeah.
listening, watching, be encouraged that he never leaves you, right? He's always there, even in the ups and downs. And prison, like you said, with the epitome of brokenness, right?
Yeah. And you'd think that would be the place where Jesus would depart, but he's so big. He's just so big. And that's what I found, that it doesn't matter where you are or how much you've failed or, and I don't want to say it in a cliche way. Like I'm saying it in a really real way. And it's not just that, oh, I go to gawk at the prisoners because their lives are so broken. Are you kidding? My own life is so broken. And so, in different seasons, we can all be so broken. So it's not an us and them. It's just, wow, what a privilege to, what a privilege to walk and see this and learn from them. And sometimes I'm teaching them, sometimes they're teaching me, right?
Yeah. So things with your family, like all those things that were going so terribly wrong and sort of beating you down and stuff like that, things changed obviously for the better for you in all those areas,
Yeah,
relatively.
I mean the business held together, and I finally sold the business because I was going I went into prison ministry, so that completely got worked out. My health turned around, and that worked out. My daughter is actually quite gifted, and so that worked out. Having a son with Asperger's was a real journey, and sometimes people will ask me about it, and I say, well, yeah, I raised Sheldon Cooper. I was the religious mom who raised Sheldon Cooper. So, I can't tell you what a gift my son has been, and he's brilliant, and but then has these difficult moments because he has this neurodiversity, but it definitely challenged me as a person who spent a lot of my life trying to be perfect and look perfect because under the surface everything was so chaotic. And yeah, he certainly taught me that perfection's overrated.
Yeah.
And it's been, Jesus has really blessed me. I've had a lot of great joys in my life. My children have been that. The journey through Asperger's was that. Prison ministry has been that. All these, I love that quote. I think it's Augustine who said that we don't see Jesus because we don't stoop low enough. And I've always found Jesus to be the closest in those moments.
Are you guys publicly funded? Are you government funded or for the prison ministry? How does that work?
We are privately funded, so individuals, foundations, churches, corporations do our they provide us with gifts. We do get the Canada Summer grants. So in terms of government funding, there's a little bit of government funding that comes through for summer grants. And then we also were part of the skills development fund, which was a one-time project that we did with the government to upskill ex-offenders, so that for those who were interested in the trades, that we could upskill them, help them transition and get into good paying jobs where they could support themselves and not go back to a life of crime.
And obviously, over 154 prisons, there's. I'm just trying to navigate around because we're talking federal and provincial prisons, which are all government run. And knowing that you guys are coming in and doing faith-based stuff is obviously working.
Yeah, how does it work? So
Well, not how does it work, but it's impressive that it is working, right? In the sense that. Where a lot of times we feel there's so much government pushback on your faith and you need to be quiet, but it's allowed here. It's kind of like that post that's been floating around for years. Like they won't allow Bibles. If they allowed Bibles in schools, maybe they wouldn't need so many in prison type thing,
Right. Yeah, it's not hard to find a Bible in a prison, that's for sure. And it's this We have worked very well with the government, and they have been very good. They've been very good to us. There can be this tension that they don't want you there for sure, or they're rolling their eyes, or like we definitely have different experiences. I've walked on to maximum secure units where they do a call out to the inmates for anyone that wants to come to your program, and I've had correctional officers that'll say, "Oh, the Jesus freak is here. Anybody want to come see the Jesus?" Jesus freaking.
It's a badge of honor. They don't realize that.
It's like, oh, you have no idea how much of a Jesus freak I am. So anyways, there's that kind of thing that comes down on. But there's the indisputable evidence as well that when prisoners come to programs of Christian faith, there's also this incredible anxiety that goes down. And I've watched people who are addicted who will come into Bible study and they've got their arms around themselves and they're just rocking back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and it's just, frenetic. And I will then just read a psalm and all of a sudden they stop rocking. And there's just something in it. So
Just something, just a little Holy Spirit in that, right?
just
Just
a
the
little
presence of the
just a
Lord.
Holy Spirit juice in there somewhere. And I was talking with a friend, and music, of course, is a big thing, and we play music and we sing hymns and we sing music, and music can go where words can't, and it's really, really powerful. I can't remember who, very, very famous rocker who said, if you give me their ears, I will have their soul. And that can be very dark, but that can also be very, we can apply that, and we see that too. And yeah.
I should know who that is, but I don't. Now that's going to
And I
bug
want to
me
say
all day.
Tommy Lee, but I'm not sure. Like I don't want to misquote it, but it's we all know him.
Yeah.
So it'll come to me.
Interesting. Yeah, it'll come to me too.
I'll text you at 3 in the morning.
Yeah. Stacy, so actually the Toddcast, our very own Sheila Juti, is a volunteer with your organization out in Alberta.
Awesome.
She's helping facilitate a Bible study for the forgiveness journey.
Right.
So just before we tap out, can you give us an example or a story of one or two people that have been impacted by your ministry's work and have come out and then have sort of given you feedback or have become part of this ministry?
Yeah, for sure. So in the so we were tra I'll give you one story. We were traveling with the CFL athletes. So every November we travel with some of the Christian CFL athletes through the prison, and they come into the prison and share their testimony and whatnot. And depending where the Grey Cup is being held. So this year it's being held in Winnipeg, and so the Blue Bombers are hosting this year. But we had a football player who came in and told his story to the inmates and whatnot, and they had to get going at the end of the evening because it was a tailgate party. But while we were there, we also handed out all of the applications and had the athletes help hand out all the applications for Angel Tree, where a prisoner can sign their kid up to receive a $40 Christmas gift, but they also get to write a handwritten tag from mom or dad that goes on the gift, and the child gets that in their mom or dad's handwriting. So I was talking with one of the chaplains later that night, and he said that this particular football player had come to the tailgate party and just kind of had his head down and just wasn't into the whole thing. And the coach asked him, "Hey, share with us as a group what's going on?" And he said, "I was an Angel Tree kid."
Wow.
And it was pretty powerful. Every Christmas we'll have one or two people as well that will write in and say, "I'm sending you this $40," or maybe they'll do it for 10 kids. They'll send $400, and they will say, "I I was in prison and you sent gifts to my children, and I now have a relationship with those kids. So I'm sending this $40 or whatever it is so that you can send that. So another mom or dad in prison can have that lifelong connection with their kids, because they fall out of conversation, and this angel, it becomes a point that you got a talking point. You know, when you want to talk to someone and you don't have a talking point, this is the talking point.
Yeah.
So that's an example. And I'll share a story of our own fellow that runs our bridge care program. He was convicted and he was charged and convicted in a stabbing, and went off to prison, was a Muslim, and came out and said, I'm not finding what I want from my own faith. And so, decided to look into Christianity and became a Christian. And he now runs our bridge care program. He's been with Prison Fellowship for nine years. So, and I would trust my children with him. So
that would be an interesting story.
Yeah.
That'd be fascinating.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah. So Raymond, look him up.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah.
That's so good. Yeah. Stacey, thank you so much for sharing your story. Very, just a lot of profound stuff and truth of the Lord in there. And it's, I just find it fascinating that how he becomes real to people is so vastly different. It's like there is no formula, right? He knows each of us, and it's just so vastly different in the time frame and all that. But thank you for sharing with us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Stacey, I just had one more question for you.
Sure.
So as a young person who had that fractured sort of family, or you moved from Almer to Mississauga, not being comfortable with all of the step parents per se or whatever, and then having some that you really were attached to, and then that gets fractured, and just this constant, just this progression of fractured stuff. If you had the opportunity somehow to where you met a young girl who wherever, but opened up that her life was that way, and she was, you could tell that she was feeling, cause you've been there.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say to encourage her?
Yeah, what I would say to encourage her is there is only one constant that can be found in this lifetime, and it is Jesus. And that's, and again, not a cliche thing. And I would explain to her how he was real in my life. And I would say, if I could put a bubble around you, I would tell you this. There's one constant. Stay with the one constant. You're going to go through a lot of stuff in this life, and some of it's going to bring you joy, and some of it's going to break your heart. And that is what's going to happen to you. But stick with the one constant.
Amen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Stacey. It was awesome to meet you and hear your story today.
Yeah, great to be with you, Todd. Really enjoyed it. Enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, bless you, my friend. Hey, can people donate to your ministry?
For sure, yeah.
And what is that, real quick, where people can donate?
So if you go to prisonfellowship.ca online, then that will bring you right to our website, and it'll be really obvious. And it'll show you the different things, because different people are interested in different things. It might be a Bible study, it might be kids and a Christmas gift, might be camp, whatever. So or the restorative justice work as well. Yeah, would appreciate that.
Okay, great. Yeah, we will definitely put that in the notes. Thanks again, Stacey. Really appreciate all the work that you and everyone is doing with that.
Thank you.
Wow, friends, what a powerful story. I say that all the time. They're all powerful because the Lord is powerful, and he'll never leave you or forsake you. And he was always there. As Stacey looked back in her life, the Lord was always there in and amongst the brokenness and the fracturedness of her family. he would put somebody else there, whether it was a youth group, whether it was a manager of a company, whether it was a Jewish family next door. He's always there. If you look back in your life right now, you'll see that he's always there because he's pursuing all of us. It's reconciliation. Reconciliation for the prisoners, reconciliation for you, friends.